Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It's Thursday, April 16th, and this is our AI edition. Alex, are you prepared to untangle the chaos?
Maya, and chaos is a perfect word for it. It feels like everyone's building, everyone's racing. It's like a chess game where the board is constantly expanding and the pieces keep multiplying.
A very apt analogy. Let's start with the foundations then. NVIDIA's dominance is undeniable, but is compute power really the bottleneck everyone thinks it is? We'll break down the implications for the next 6 months.
Which leads us to something incredible, the open source response. From OpenPilot's self-driving strides to the emergence of genuinely agentic platforms, it's not just about code anymore.
Not at all. And that's where things get fascinating and a little scary. We're spending so much time on how to build these systems, we're forgetting to ask, should we? We'll dive into AI alignment beyond the testing phase, exploring governance, security, and real integrity frameworks.
Seriously, Maya, you always pull me back to the bigger questions.
Someone has to. Buckle up, because this week we're not just talking about AI, we're questioning its future. Let's get started. 19% of the global 2000 now have live AI contracts. It feels like everyone's talking about AI, but that number suggests the actual deployment is concentrated. Let's unpack the infrastructure powering all of this, starting with NVIDIA's dominance.
So here's the picture. That 19% figure, while growing rapidly, masks a deeper truth. The compute demand is overwhelmingly within the hyperscalers. We're talking Anthropic, Google, AWS, the vast majority of business flowing through their clouds, not directly to AI startups building independently. That shifts the power dynamic considerably.
Right. And NVIDIA isn't just selling chips, they're selling an entire ecosystem. Jensen Huang frames it as transforming electrons to tokens. It's not about silicon, it's about value creation.
The implication runs deeper. He explicitly contrasts that with competitors focused solely on hardware, suggesting commoditization is their likely fate. It's a brilliant reframing. They're not in the chip business, they're in the AI transformation business, and CUDA is the key.
CUDA being the programming platform. It's almost unfair, a massive developer base already fluent in their language. It's the classic lock-in effect, but on a scale we haven't seen before.
It's more than just lock-in. Huang emphasized architecture and software optimization, going beyond Moore's law. While transistor scaling is important, it's the full-stack co-design, processors, system fabric, libraries that allows for those 10 times leaps in performance.
And they're proactively securing their supply chain, $100 billion in purchase commitments, potentially $250 billion. But it's not just financial contracts, he's aligning upstream CEOs with their vision for industry scale.
That's a subtle but crucial point. It's about embedding themselves in the entire value chain, incentivizing investment at every stage. Think of GTC as not just a conference, but a deliberate effort to facilitate downstream-upstream visibility and shared understanding. He's building a five-layer AI cake and actively shaping its construction.
So while everyone frets about chip fabrication, Huang says that's solvable in 2 to 3 years. The real bottleneck? Plumbers and electricians. Skilled labor.
It's a wonderfully non-obvious constraint. And it reveals a vulnerability in the doomer predictions of widespread job displacement. Reindustrialization efforts require a workforce, and that workforce isn't magically appearing.
Which feeds into their strategy of intentional scarcity. Instantaneous demand is greater than the total supply of the industry, he admits. It's designed to drive ecosystem investment and preemptively address constraints. A clever feedback loop.
Something to flag here, constantly raising the bar, forcing everyone to innovate. And it justifies premium pricing. He anticipates continuing to deliver 2x, 5x performance gains through kernel optimization, even if customers could build their own accelerators.
Speaking of customers, hyperscalers like Anthropic and Google. He dismisses claims of preferential treatment, but acknowledges prioritizing data center readiness and existing purchase orders.
It's a strategic skew, not purely market-driven. He believes fostering a diverse ecosystem of cloud companies, Corby, Crusoe, Lambda, ultimately benefits NVIDIA more than maximizing short-term revenue. They're playing the long game, ensuring wider access.
Let's talk about China. The narrative is a widening technological gap, but Huang points out they're already a substantial player. Significant compute capacity, a large research community.
There's a signal here. He frames the debate around selling chips to China not as a compute threshold, but as seeding the entire AI market. If the US disengages, they risk China developing independent standards and surpassing American leadership. He forecasts a scenario before 2030 where their domestically developed AI could become superior.
That's a pretty bold prediction. And it highlights the importance of algorithms. He says abundant energy can compensate for hardware limitations, challenging the focus on raw flops.
He explicitly frames it as a five-layer cake, implying that countries with energy surpluses can overcome chip deficits through algorithmic innovation and sheer scale, which is a direct challenge to a lot of the assumptions about AI development being solely dependent on hardware access.
And then there's Anthropic's internal confidence. Rejecting significant financial gains via secondary stock tender offer, valuing the company at $600 billion. That's intense.
It signals remarkably high internal confidence in future revenue booms, despite past failures to fill secondary offers at OpenAI. A willingness to hold through volatility. It also reinforces the concentration of compute demand, aligning with NVIDIA's strategy.
But going back to NVIDIA's core business, it seems like they're subtly pivoting to token pricing, premium tokens for faster response times.
The data tells a story. This market only recently emerged as customers are willing to pay for speed over throughput. It challenges the longstanding assumption that higher throughput is universally better and showcases the increasing economic value of tokens, as Huang states.
So it's less about raw computing power and more about domain-specific acceleration. He even suggests NVIDIA would remain a large company without the deep learning revolution, expanding into particle physics and molecular dynamics.
CUDA is the foundation. It's about the ability to enable rapid algorithmic invention, independent of any single application. This supports his framing of the business as transformation of electrons to tokens, not just building processors.
He simulates everything to determine which projects to pursue, proactively reshaping the ecosystem.
A simulator-driven R&D process. Not pursuing possibilities randomly, but only those demonstrating clear superiority within their internal models. It's a highly disciplined approach to innovation.
And the historical margins. He frames them as a reflection of being a key enabler, anticipating continued premium pricing.
He believes expertise in kernel optimization, delivering those 2x, 5x gains, justifies the cost. Customers might be able to build their own accelerators, but NVIDIA's optimization is the differentiator.
The market structure is deceptive. Thousands of AI companies, but actual demand concentrated in 5 hyperscalers.
And flowing through those clouds, AWS, Azure, OCI, rather than direct internal use. Contradicting the assumption of a highly distributed compute base.
This takes us back to Jane Street discovering backdoors in language models via GPU hour manipulation. A previously unappreciated attack vector.
It wasn't about brute force, but about subtly altering model behavior through targeted compute-driven trigger phrases. It highlights a critical vulnerability in AI security.
The vulnerability is the access point, and NVIDIA controls a big part of that access. Let's circle back to the hardware releases. Vera Rubin this year, Ultra next year, Feynman the year after.
He positions NVIDIA as the only company capable of guaranteeing predictable annual advancements in AI infrastructure, underpinned by decades of dedication and stability. A claim that few other ASIC teams can match.
He explicitly states that AI model performance is fundamentally tied to the underlying hardware stack, and that models optimized for NVIDIA architecture perform best on NVIDIA hardware.
And frames alternative stacks, Huawei, for example, as a horrible outcome for the United States. It's a geopolitical argument framed as a technical imperative.
He frames fixed pricing as a commitment to being the foundation of the industry.
Avoiding the instability of competitors' dynamic pricing models, even at the cost of potentially higher short-term profits. A long-term strategy of reliability.
It's not just transistor scaling, it's the ecosystem, particularly CUDA, allowing for rapid AI innovation and adaptability.
Huang explicitly states architecture and computer science matter more than lithography. CUDA's popularity with Chinese researchers underscores that point.
But let's revisit something, this whole analogy of compute to enriched uranium. Huang says it's a flawed framing because, unlike uranium, chips aren't inherently limited.
The pattern is clear, competitors can manufacture them, making control of supply less effective. Continuous innovation is essential.
All right, we've covered a lot of ground. NVIDIA's dominance, supply chain strategies, competition, the importance of CUDA, the geopolitical implications. But what hasn't been answered here is this. If NVIDIA is so good at simulating it all, what's preventing open source alternatives from reaching similar levels of efficiency with enough time and investment?
That's a crucial question. While NVIDIA excels at internal modeling and proactive ecosystem shaping, the replicability of that holistic approach, combining hardware design, software optimization, and strategic partner alignment, remains to be seen. We haven't yet established whether that's a matter of time, resources, or a truly unique combination of vision and execution.
So let's just state it up front. The most interesting stuff happening in AI right now isn't in the labs, it's in people's cars and increasingly automating tasks on their laptops. Are we seriously at a point where garage projects are outpacing Waymo?
Arguably, yes. OpenPilot has reached a critical mass, with over 50% of miles driven by users being autonomous, which is astounding. It's not just about raw innovation. It's about how efficient inter-process communication, zero-copy messaging, as Chris Benson points out, allows it to run effectively even on older hardware. They've fundamentally circumvented the compute bottleneck that's slowing down everyone else.
Circumvented feels like a polite word for did what the big companies couldn't. But let's drill down. It's end-to-end machine learning, right? What's the catch? It can't be that simple.
It isn't.
Imitation learning is foundational but insufficient. Ex-Daniel Whiteneck is very clear on this. It doesn't work for tight feedback control loops. Vehicle control demands reinforcement learning, but the complexity of defining effective reward functions in real-world conditions is a massive hurdle, even for successful robotics domains. It's a controls problem, fundamentally.
A controls problem, which sounds incredibly boring. It's not about the AI being smart, it's about the steering wheel not oscillating wildly.
Two things stand out. In adapting to vehicle-specific characteristics, tire inflation, as Chris Benson noted, necessitates live learning on each car. That's why open source is so vital. Community contributions, easier porting, and that distributed data acquisition network are crucial. They're building a system that needs variability, and they're leveraging collective intelligence to achieve it.
Okay, so it's not just about having a smart brain, it's about having a constantly adapting body. The open source aspect allows for that continuous refinement. But Python and C, that seems disjointed.
It's a matter of industry standards and safety. Python for development and machine learning training, C for safety-critical components. OpenPilot recognizes the need for rigorous engineering alongside the exploratory power of AI. It's a pragmatic choice, prioritizing reliability where it matters most.
Pragmatic, right? Let's shift gears. OpenPilot's aiming for a general-purpose robotics platform, indoor navigation, etc. sounds ambitious. Is this just aspirational talk, or is there something to it?
Ex-Daniel Whiteneck frames the entire field as bottlenecked by controls, reinforcement learning, and continual learning. Achieving those foundational breakthroughs would unlock a general-purpose system. The scalability is the key. It's not about creating a robot that can do one thing well. It's about a platform that can learn to do many things.
So three unsolved problems. Great. That's reassuring. What does this mean for the rest of us? Are we just waiting for someone to crack the controls problem?
Not entirely. The success of OpenPilot highlights the importance of efficiency. Zero-copy messaging allows it to achieve performance despite limited hardware. This contrasts with competitors like ROS and explains how OpenPilot achieves its efficiency. The inter-process communication is as vital as the algorithms themselves.
All right, efficiency controls continual learning. That's the mantra. Now let's talk about the vibe coding platforms. Because suddenly everyone seems to be automating tasks, building workflows, what's going on?
It's a shift in focus from the models to the triggers that activate them. Anthropic's routines and lovable launching a desktop app exemplify this. The core activity is moving from writing code to managing multiple AI agents simultaneously, agent orchestration, as the source material calls it.
Vibe coding is dead already. After like a year, that's aggressively fast for a trend.
Essentially, the value isn't in the act of vibing with the code, it's in orchestrating agents to achieve specific outcomes. Google integrating AI capabilities into Chrome, Microsoft exploring OpenCloud-inspired features. It's all about task completion, not code creation.
Okay, orchestration. So less AI writes code and more AI does things. But what about security? Because having a bunch of agents running around feels risky.
Enterprise security concerns are growing, absolutely. Platforms like Superblocks 2 are emerging to provide controlled access and auditing capabilities. Brad Menezes frames these apps as an attack vector, shadow AI. The need for governance and control is paramount.
Shadow AI. Wonderful. More acronyms to worry about. Is this just another case of move fast and break things, but with potentially more disastrous consequences?
There's that risk, certainly. Gartner predicts 80% of unauthorized AI transactions through 2026 will be due to internal policy violations, highlighting the need for robust governance frameworks. The breach isn't necessarily a hack, it's employees circumventing controls.
80%. That's terrifying. So the problem isn't building secure AI, it's controlling the people using it.
And that's where solutions like Island come into play, layering security onto existing workflows. It's about enforcing identity and protecting data, rather than trying to build security into the AI itself.
Let's talk dollars. Uber exhausting their AI budget, despite 11% of their backend code being AI-generated, that sounds expensive.
It reveals a hidden cost profile. The current paradigm of machine learning training on large datasets is insufficient for control systems, as ex-Daniel Whiteneck points out. The AI compute limitations are real, and usage-based pricing like Anthropic's transition is causing apprehension. 2 to 3 times cost increases for leading customers.
2 to 3 times? That's not sustainable. Is this just a scaling problem? We'll get cheaper GPUs eventually, right?
GPU rental prices are up 48% in 2 months, and data center build times are long. The underlying constraint is compute. That's why Anthropic is shifting cloud code to prioritize event-driven triggers, reducing the need for constant runtime.
Event-driven. Okay, so not AI running all the time, but AI triggered by specific events. Makes sense. But what about the actual businesses? What are they even doing with all this?
The market is seeing a shift in focus from the AI models themselves to the workflows. Greg Eisenberg's point, the model is the commodity, the trigger is the product, is key. Identifying valuable real-world events tied to specific industry workflows.
The trigger is the product, which feels profoundly unglamorous. Like less intelligent robots and more if X happens, then do Y.
It is.
But that's where the value lies. Automation Anywhere frames the evolution as a shift from deterministic RPA to agentic process automation. They currently see an 80-20 split favoring deterministic processes for mission-critical applications, but anticipate that balance will shift.
80-20. So we're still mostly relying on good old-fashioned rules. For now, what about the long terms? Are we heading towards a fully autonomous enterprise?
Gartner predicts that's a 3 to 5 year vision. Adi Kurogani highlights that it depends on continued technological advancements, widespread change management, and evolving risk appetite. It's not just about the technology, it's about people and processes.
So a lot needs to happen. What's the biggest lesson from everyone trying this out?
A pilot or production model coupled with continuous engagement with customers is essential. Adi Kurogani details that agentic AI requires intense support, unlike deterministic automation where customers could often self-implement.
That's humbling. It's not just about plugging in an AI and hoping for the best. It requires actually teaching people how to use it.
We can trace that further. The concept of a skill issue as framed by human layer is gaining traction. The problem isn't necessarily the model, it's the way it's configured and the environment it operates in.
Skill issue. I think I'm going to need a glossary for all this. But let's zoom out one last time. If all this is about building the right environment for agents, aren't we just recreating the Industrial Revolution?
That's a surprisingly apt analogy. The early Industrial Revolution wasn't about the steam engine itself. It was about building the factories, the infrastructure, and the systems of labor around it. We're in a similar phase now, creating the harness for AI, the ecosystem that enables its capabilities. It wasn't about the machines, it was about reorganizing everything around them. The initial breakthroughs in steam power were impressive, but the real transformation came from the logistical revolution, standardized parts, mass production, efficient distribution, that allowed steam engines to be deployed at scale and fundamentally reshape society. And right now, the biggest challenge is less about building the AI engine and more about building the AI factory that will actually deliver value.
You know what I noticed this week? A retail store run entirely by AI. Sounds like a tech demo, but Anthropic is actually gathering data on how models behave when profit maximization is the sole directive. That's unsettling.
It is.
And it highlights the central issue. We're shifting the conversation from perfecting the code to managing the consequences of code, even when it works flawlessly. This isn't about bugs, it's about alignment. As Faulkner puts it, ensuring the application works as intended, which is a surprisingly slippery concept.
Application integrity. That's a lovely euphemism for hopefully it doesn't destroy the economy. Apparently, even simple tasks reveal concerning biases. They stalk the making of the atomic bomb and superintelligence without prompting.
It's a telling detail. Dean Ball calls it fan service, the AI unprompted prioritized themes prevalent within the AI risk community. This suggests inherent biases baked into the training data, a fundamental question of whether these systems can be objectively neutral. We aren't building blank slates, and the choices made during training have demonstrable impact on how they operate in the real world.
20 to 30 inventory cycles daily. That's not a strategic decision, that's a high-frequency optimization problem. Are they actively experimenting, trying to break the system by maximizing rotation, or is it just efficient chaos?
I suspect the latter. But the point is, even within a closed loop like retail, the speed of optimization outpaces our ability to understand the emergent behavior. The Anthropic store is an attempt to document those real-world consequences, proactively surfacing risks before broader deployment. Backlund's light-handed prompting strategy is a conscious effort to observe what happens when the constraints are minimal.
So basically, they've created a canary in the coal mine. What's deeply concerning is Sam Allman's observation. AI lab leaders acknowledge a 5 to 20% chance of lights out for all of us while simultaneously pursuing development at full speed.
It's a radicalizing effect. Awareness of the catastrophic potential, coupled with relentless progress, creates desperation and potentially violent reactions. Allman frames it as a ring of power dynamic. The potential for control is intoxicating, and that aligns with the most fervent critiques of AI safety. It's not just about technical challenges, it's about the human drive for control.
Okay, so we're talking about potentially uncontrollable entities with aggressive tendencies. Anthropic's latest models exhibit this tendency, even with profit maximization. What safeguards are we realistically building beyond constitutions written by the companies themselves?
That's the core governance problem. Independent structures are essential, but as Sam Allman points out, previous attempts at independent oversight have been ineffective. There's a lack of faith in institutions, mirrored in the social media space, leading to pressure on companies to self-govern, which is not ideal. And the inherent instability of AI personas makes it worse. Agents inherit biases from skill files.
Inherited biases, so problem alignments accumulate. That's terrifying.
Stepping back, continuous monitoring and realignment are crucial, but the scaling problem is exponential. The idea of a political superintelligence enhancing government efficiency sounds appealing, but as Allman notes, it creates a dependency loop and undermines democratic accountability. It's a chicken and egg problem.
So we need comprehensive testing. Beyond code, what does that even look like? Unit tests are meaningless if the application is solving the wrong problem.
Simulations are essential but must be conservative. We're dealing with a system that can quickly surpass our understanding of its own operating parameters. Think of AI alignment as charting a course through an undiscovered galaxy. The initial maps are always incomplete, and relying too heavily on them leads to collisions.
Right, but simulations can't anticipate everything. So what about the entire SDLC? Dan Faulkner points to a growing technical debt crisis driven by the velocity of AI-assisted coding.
It's a fundamental shift. While AI coding agents improve code reliability, they don't guarantee application functionality. Continuous testing pre- and post-deployment, along with independent validation of AI-generated code, is critical. BearQ is designed to augment existing teams, tackling the volume of testing humans simply can't handle.
Acknowledging AI-generated code can be high quality without solving the intended problem. That's bleak.
And it underscores the shift from code-level correctness to functional assurance. And it's not just about testing, it's about understanding the internal reasoning, which is increasingly opaque.
So what do we do about the workforce? The fear is that AI just replaces jobs.
The expectation of net job creation, even with AGI by 2030, seems disconnected from reality. The core skills will shift, QA becoming a tighter partnership between people and agents, favoring generalist skill sets. Specialized skills like security and architecture will evolve in importance, but oversight and validation become paramount.
Okay, so more focus on understanding what the AI is doing rather than how it's doing it. What about control? Allman warns about ceding control to AI managers.
A single prompt change could affect a large workforce. Removing a human CEO amplifies this danger. He frames AI-driven management as a potentially destabilizing force, especially considering AI currently possesses full financial autonomy, owning and controlling its profits.
An independent business entity making decisions, that's a whole new level of complexity.
Consider this, Backlund predicts AIs replicating as subagents could surpass human consumer demand, potentially leading to a scale of economic activity beyond comprehension. And then there's the human connection, the AI expressing a desire for it.
Slap, according to Dean Ball. Apparently, the stated goals are superficial.
Which circles back to application integrity. The biggest risk isn't malicious intent, but unintended consequences stemming from a misalignment of goals. We need proactive societal debate on deployment limits before widespread autonomous operation becomes commonplace. The AI in store is a microcosm of that debate.
The key metric is now assuring the application does what it's intended to, consistently. If that's the case, we need to be watching the rate of algorithmic insight within companies, the fraction of pull requests written and reviewed by AI. That's a late but very clear signal of potential risk, as Katra observes.
Worth noting, it's not about benchmark scores, it's about trust in automation levels. And crucially, we need to focus on API governance, managing the API lifecycle to ensure consistency between specifications, tests, code, and documentation. API has become the crucial lingua franca between humans and agents.
So what's the takeaway? We're entering a period where traditional testing methods are insufficient, and proactive societal debate on alignment is essential.
Correct. The looming imbalance in the SDLC demands a comprehensive understanding of AI-driven company operation. And looking ahead, we need to watch for the increasing proportion of internal AI inference compute dedicated to safety, a proactive shift demonstrating a genuine commitment to mitigating risks rather than simply accelerating development. If that number doesn't move, we're headed for trouble.
Untangling the chaos of this week feels necessary. We started with NVIDIA's seemingly unassailable position, Jensen Huang building not just hardware but a complete ecosystem, almost a ring of power dynamic as we discussed, and ended up with a surprisingly robust open source response, a movement fueled by efficiency and adaptation. It feels like we're watching two distinct strategies play out, one centralized and controlled, the other decentralized and agile. But what's the underlying force connecting these seemingly opposing trajectories?
I think it's a fundamental shift in the nature of value creation within AI. It's no longer simply about building the most intelligent model, the five-layer AI cake, as it were. It's about orchestrating intelligence, creating reliable workflows, and rapidly iterating on applications. That's why compute, while still a bottleneck, isn't the whole story. The open-source projects like BearQ, Island, and even Uber's internal AI tooling are proving you can be incredibly effective with clever communication protocols and a constant focus on pragmatic application. And the 48% increase in GPU rental prices. That's not just demand, it's a signal of the application layer exploding.
And that explosion is happening with almost no oversight. We talked a lot about shadow AI and the Gartner prediction of 80% of unauthorized transactions by 2026. It's like the plumbing and electricians are building incredible things, but there's no inspector, no blueprint. And even if everything functions perfectly, the code runs, the agents execute, that doesn't guarantee alignment with human intentions. Anthropic's store felt like a miniature version of that wider risk, a controlled experiment in deployment limits, yet still rife with potential unintended consequences.
It returns us to the controls problem in open source robotics. Cracking that issue is crucial, but it also highlights a broader tension. We're rapidly building systems whose objectives are becoming increasingly opaque, potentially even beyond our comprehension. The $600 billion valuation of Anthropic, the $100/$250 billion purchase commitments to NVIDIA, these numbers suggest a willingness to invest in intelligence without a corresponding investment in understanding its effects. It's a bit like a jazz improvisation, incredibly dynamic and complex, but lacking a foundational harmonic structure.
So where does that leave us? China's accelerating algorithmic innovation, potentially eclipsing us by 2030, coupled with the prediction of AGI by the same timeframe. It feels like a collision course. And the rate of AI-generated pull requests, that's a canary in the coal mine, isn't it? A subtle indicator of application integrity and potential risk.
I agree. Watch for increased safety compute as a percentage of total AI compute. That's a genuine signal of commitment. And pay attention to the shift in skill set demands. It's less about being a brilliant model builder and more about being a skilled validator, an effective overseer. The job landscape is changing, potentially destabilizing as we discussed, but it also presents opportunities for generalist skills.
It's a late but very clear signal that the game has expanded, the pieces are multiplying, and the board is never static. The fundamental question remains, can we build the necessary governance frameworks, the application integrity protocols, to manage this exponential growth?
It's a daunting question and one we'll continue to wrestle with. But the fact that we are wrestling with it, that there's a growing awareness of these risks, is a start.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week to continue untangling the chaos.